I know.
We're on.
It's like a casino.
Like to call to order the June 12th board discussion session. This is January 12th, 1 p.m., and this meeting is audio recorded. We're going to board members.
I don't have anything at this point.
Mr. Searcy.
Nope.
Mr. Jimenez.
Yes, I'd like to request an update on what's happening with our charter schools in terms of the 0.6 mil and the appeal by Somerset Academy. Like, what's going on with those two items?
Okay, I'll actually end up deferring both of those items to Mr. Gresta because she's handling both those. We're at the mediation process with the 0.6 mil, and we are responding to the appeal on the applications from Somerset. So, Mr. Gresta.
Absolutely. Thank you, board members. With regard to the 0.6 millage, the mediation session occurred several weeks ago with the Department of Education mediator. A resolution was not able to be reached at that meeting. And the next step from the Department of Education is the mediator was to return to Tallahassee and report back to the Commissioner of Education. The charter statute says the Commissioner of Education then has the authority to issue a letter declaring the issue to be an impasse between the parties. If and when that letter is issued by the Commissioner of Education, that would then allow either party to file an administrative petition with the Division of Administrative Hearings, for an evidentiary hearing to be held on the issue. At this point, a letter has not been issued by the Commissioner of Education, so we're kind of in a holding pattern, if you will, until the Commissioner of Education takes some sort of action on the letter. With regard to the Somerset charter application that was denied by this board just before the winter break, we had until December 18 to file a response on behalf of the school district, which we did. That response was filed with the Department of Education. At this point, it is up for the Department of Education and the State Board of Education to schedule the matter onto a State Board of Education meeting for the State Board to consider the issue of those two applications. This will be a little different for those of you that follow charter school applications and appeal processes. Since this was a high-performing replication application, the appeal process goes directly to the State Board of Education for a decision. Other types of charter application issues go to the Charter Schools Appeal Commission. But we are not going to the Appeals Commission. These two applications that were presented to this school board will go directly to the State Board of Education. We're waiting to receive notification from the State Board as to the date and time of that meeting where then those will be held, and we will provide that once we receive information. So for both of the items at this point, we're kind of waiting for other parties to respond back to us with more information.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're going to skip this item until the next round and talk about, I just want to bring up, there was a timeline date for the superintendent's evaluation. It's on tonight's agenda. If they don't coincide with the dates that were on, I mean, I guess when we made the contract with the superintendent, we pick certain dates, but then after hiring and in practical application and when things are in, the dates on tonight's schedule is preferable, and I think it's because then we can assess certain data return, and I'll turn it over to Dr. Rendell if you could explain why these dates are better, and if you are willing to, through just a quick amendment that the school attorney can draw up, he's, from my understanding, willing to amend those dates on your contract for the...
Correct. It would have been to my advantage to leave the dates the way they were. You were to give your final assessment. I was to do my goals for next year without data for this year. So each year you would be giving me my final assessment, and we would be setting goals for next year when we don't necessarily have performance data for this year. So, you know, the targets that I would set, we wouldn't be able to measure the following year by the timeline. So two of the dates on that original draft calendar I adjusted to fall after when we should receive data from the state on how we did this year. So basically, the date for the final assessment is after it has been in the past, so that we should have some data so we can say whether we met the goals or not. And then the date for the goal setting for the following year is later, it's in August, so we have the data to review and set realistic goals. In the past, the way it was set, it was you were making my final determination, I think, in late May, early June.
I believe so. I can give you the contract dates if I actually brought the sheet with me. In the employment contract, it says that the superintendent is to provide an annual progress report to the board before May 1. And on the timeline sheet that's being proposed on your consent agenda for this evening, the date is May 24, which provides for additional weeks to get additional data in before the superintendent provides that annual progress report to the board. So that would be the one date change from what the contract says. The second date change is goal setting, as you were just mentioning. The employment agreement provides that goal setting will occur no later than June 30 of every year. And the date being proposed on the timeline for this evening's meeting approval is that there will be a discussion session on July 26, and then board adoption of the goals that are then developed on August 9. So, again, I think it was to allow for additional data and information to come in to perhaps better inform some of the goals, if that would be helpful. If the board would like these date shifts from the employment agreement, it would be a simple task for me to prepare just a very short amendment to the employment agreement, changing just those two dates to later in the months than what's currently reflected, so that in future years you have a little more flexibility to set your timeline after you get your data in from the state. So that was kind of just a timing thing that we needed to be sure that we were aware of.
So that affects the meeting tonight, where we can, in the sense that nothing's necessary tonight, we can go ahead and approve, if so desired, that that agenda item, and then just a minor, as you said, adjust it if there was consensus. So that's okay.
So that will be done tonight.
It's on our agenda.
His date. Make an amended motion.
The recommended timeline is...
No, his timeline
on the agenda
is on the agenda.
Oh, and then we have to fix
it. Employment contract, which he's letting us know now, is...
So we have to pull it from consent. Is it under consent? So it has to be pulled.
It can be approved under consent tonight, and then an amendment to the contract can happen even at the next board meeting.
At the next board meeting, I'll bring a document back for you to actually look at.
Oh, okay.
It was just when I was setting the dates, Suzanne pointed out that a couple of dates fall outside the contract, and I could have said, well, let's go back to the contract dates, but in reality, we won't have enough data to make some of those decisions, especially the goal setting for next year. So,
Ms. Cross.
Well, I sent everyone a little bit of a summary on Senate Bill 1360, which this board had a part in bringing to fruition. That's Don Gates' bill on testing flexibility that would basically, I'll give you a quick high overview and send you a summary later. It's a bill that would allow districts to opt into a rigorous alternate assessment, which includes the ACT, Aspire grades 3-8, the ACT, the PSAT, NMSQT, SAT, CLEP, and DSST, and no, I won't say what each of those are. Just seriously, I hope you'll forgive me because many of them
you don't have to vote on it.
Okay, right. This is just information. It does create it creates the option without obligation. Districts can still opt to administer whatever standard statewide standardized test they choose. The timeline for implementation is extremely aggressive and probably the most troubling piece of it. With districts will have to decide if they want to participate in an alternate assessment by April, and then the Commission of Education will be required to negotiate with the FSA contractor FAIR, renegotiate that contract, and simultaneously negotiate contracts with whichever vendors the districts choose. So let's just keeping it simple. District of Indian River County wants to use ACT for its 10th grade ELA and algebra requirements. We send a note to Commissioner Stewart. She then negotiates our typical FSA 10th grade ELA and gets a price from ACT. It is in the bill that it be budget neutral, which is actually another issue because it may be stipulating something that Commissioner Stewart may not be able to do because it has to hold the current price per student of FSA, so there can be no increase. So if you and I are making 1,000 tests a year, and then the state comes back to us and says, well, we only want 100, we still have to hold the price of 1,000 at 100. So that may be a concern. So other real benefits of this, again, high level, is that it allows for more career and technical certifications to be included into, so if a student gets their pilot ground license, they don't have to take Algebra 1 or 2 EOC. If they get their AMP, their airframe repair, there are certain they can take one mathematics that they don't have to take Algebra 2. So if you have a student who necessarily isn't headed to the University of Florida and they want to become an aircraft maintenance person, which is a very high paying profession, they can simply get the certification, and the AICE is included in these, as well as CAPE and AP and IB. So it gives the district's flexibility to actually make more meaningful career and technical programs without a lot of the state standardized testing requirements and still allow them to graduate. It removes the caps on the bonus programs for CAPE, AP, IB, and ACE, which are currently capped at $3,000, and I don't know where that money comes from, whether it's coming from the state or local funds. And the most interesting inclusion, it's one of the last sentences in the bill, is that it would excuse classroom teachers from having students with more than 25 absences being included in their performance evaluation, more than 10 if they're blocked. So if you have a student who's chronically absent, it won't hit their van, essentially. That was the most interesting piece, and I think I know why it's in there. Today, I just checked, this bill was sponsored and filed on the 7th, I think, by past President Gates. Today, I checked, and it has 4 co-sponsors, including Senator Negron and Senator Jeremy Ring, so there is bipartisan support for it. And we have the future president of the Senate behind this bill now. So it may actually go somewhere. There's still no House companion, though. And given that. All right, so that's it for me. So you made a difference, at least hopefully. We'll see.
Thank you. Second round, Mr. McKean.
No, thank you.
Okay. Charles Searcy.
I'm still trying to follow Sean's.
No. You'll get the summary, so it's high level.
Yeah, I do have a question. Go back to all of those things you use, the CAPE and the AIP and all that stuff, and just tell us what all those things are. I mean, you know, I'm
sure.
Kind of new here.
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm even newer here. I haven't served 4 years.
But you've got the notes in front of you there.
I
mean,
do.
Some of these folks.
I don't know what they mean, but the ACT.
I know what the ACT is.
The ACT is a standard admission test for college. The SAT, similarly, and it'll be difficult to say that it doesn't indicate career ready or college readiness because guess what? The SAT is norm. That's how they set the score, is how students do at the end of their first year. So that test is literally designed to test college readiness. And candidly, what's likely to survive session will be the secondary rather than the grades 3 through 8 because there's a lot of concern about introducing the ACT Aspire version of that rather than the FSA because it may not line up with early reading requirements.
And FSA is?
Thank you. Florida Standards Assessment, which is the new standards, which some tie to the Common Core curriculum.
It replaced
FCAT.
It's the law of the land right now.
Exactly. It's what we have. It's the new Sunshine Standards. It's the new whatever. So PSAT, everyone knows. SAT, CLEP. College level examination program, which I took in the Marine Corps. You know, you could basically CLEP out of courses. I CLEPed, I think, microeconomics.
CLEP
and macroeconomics.
Yeah.
Well, it's it allows you to take a single test and demonstrate one semester's worth of learning at the college level.
You get college credit.
And that's the beauty, yeah, and thank you, Ms. Searcy, for pointing down that road, because there are ways to get college credit and dual enrollment through these programs so that students graduate with the district and actually help, possibly help with our recalibration, because we won't take those monies back out of credits. So there's a lot of good here, like especially districts like Brevard that out of current operating funds give every student the ACT. And then the state provides them with the FSA, the Florida Standards Assessment for English and Language Arts, ELA. So it's costing the taxpayers that state dollars. It's costing the taxpayers of Brevard the local dollars to administer the ACT, whereas should this bill pass, should this legislation pass, Brevard can say, we want to just go with the ACT, and now the state pays for that, and that'll free up local dollars to spend on technology or teachers or whatever Brevard chooses. So it keeps local dollars in the classroom. So there are a lot of real good, really positive benefits to this, and it's a 52-page bill. It's onerous.
Why can't they get a House sponsor?
I suspect that they have one. If no one else, I suspect President Gates knows somebody in the House.
So to answer your question about the CAPE certification, so most of the applied technology we used to call vocational courses, mm-hmm. now there's some kind of certification exam for those. For the clinical, for the CNA, it's the CNA exam, so mm-hmm. for the entry-level nursing program. The welding has a certification test. Mm-hmm. So for a couple of the ones that Mr. Frost mentioned, like the ground crew certification, there's actually a certification for that. Mm-hmm. Some of those certifications are on a list that if that bill were to pass, if a student were to earn that certification, that could count for their Algebra 1 EOC score mm-hmm. or some other score that our kids are having trouble passing. In other words, kids who can demonstrate the knowledge through applying the skills would have a way to graduate high school with a regular diploma even if they can't pass that Algebra 1 EOC. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's... Like you said, there's a lot of good ideas in the bill. I'm hoping a lot of the good ideas make it through. If it does get passed, that they make it through. And the easiest way to apply it, all these alternative assessments would be at the secondary level right now. Because really the only thing available and at the primary grades is the Iowa assessment, which is the old Iowa Test of Basic Skills, or some of these other testing companies are saying they have other tests. They're nationally normed and all that kind of thing. But there aren't too many that are out there right now besides CITVS mm-hmm. or Iowa Assessment and NAEP, which is not every grade level. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have a feeling that if it gets through, it'll be secondary as a pilot kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But we would take a look at maybe we would offer, like Brevard and some other districts do, all of our high school students the ACT and not bother with the FSA. You know, and that way, if you're taking that ACT, that's a college entrance exam, not just a state test that you have to pass to graduate. So it's two, you would get two for the price of one.
Now, Sean, you said something about the implementation timeline. Does that mean that in theory this bill can get passed and this April we'd have to decide?
Yes. Yeah, we'd have to decide, yes, but for next year.
Right, but this April we'd have to decide.
Right, and parents would have until August 10th to opt out individually. And that's another wrinkle that I think may end up coming out of this final bill, because it allows a parent to say, now I want my kid to take the FSA, and imagine Dr. Rendell's challenge and implementing that.
Yeah, because we'll have some people taking this test, some people taking this test.
Mm, should be an all or nothing.
Right.
But now you said Brevard mm-hmm. has to pay for every student that takes the ACT.
Currently.
Correct.
Out of operating.
Yeah, will that be what we do if we opt for the ACT?
It depends on how the bill comes out. If the bill comes out that we can use the ACT completely in lieu of the FSA, then everybody that takes the ACT won't have to take the FSA.
And that's what Sean was referring to as cost neutral or budget neutral.
Okay. What are we paying for now?
Yeah, for the FSA.
It's
state funds.
No, I mean, what are we paying for? Are we doing an SAT?
We don't.
Just the PSAT?
Yes. But like Brevard, in 11th grade, every student takes the ACT. They set a school date and they administer the ACT. So it's an additional test that we don't offer right now.
And just to let you know, I just signed up for one. $56, $59 one test. And so that's a lot of money out of
We discussed this with the high school principals and high school guidance counselors back in September or October about, hey, in the future, would we, before this bill even heard about this, is this something we would want to do? Because it, if a student does score high enough on the math portion of the ACT, that can, again, also count for their Algebra 1 EOC. And we do have students that do better on the ACT math than they do on the Algebra 1 EOC. It's hard to believe. But it would have been an additional test. And if you remember back in September or October, we were no more testing. So we backed off on that. But now that it could be an option in lieu of other testing, I'm sure the high school principals would be really interested in that.
Right. And this and the bill, the proposed bill, I believe, actually says that it would not be duplicative testing and that we wouldn't just be piling on and piling on and piling on. Because, well, we can anyway, because now we have to be held over 5%.
So. What's the bill number, Sean?
1360. Gates.
SB.
SB, thank you. SB 1360. What hopefully it'll be Senate bill. Senate. Hopefully it'll be an HB soon. And it'll just say identical. Because it doesn't say.
You ought to talk to the son.
He's got so many bills right now, especially the open carry, and he's running for Senate. So I'm sure that...
But he's still going to be a part of this legislative session.
He is.
As a state representative.
He is, but as you know, they only get 6 bills, and today's the last day to file. So we'll know by the end of today whether... or the House can always take up the Senate language. But we'll see. Again, you never know. I just thought I would bring that forward because it's something that this board has worked hard on and it's something we support. So it's exciting to see. And then I was really excited to see Senator Negron as the co-sponsor. That means something.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I just wanted the superintendent to talk a little bit about graduation rates. We saw the article in the newspaper. And, you know, the reason why I bring these things up is because we get the emails, and as board members, we know what's going on. But for community members that are interested, this is an opportunity to kind of get the word out about what's happening. So what is our response to the decline that we're seeing in graduation rates, despite the coding error that would actually increase it a little bit, but it's still in decline?
Right, so I'll take each school separately. So River Beach High School actually increased from 75 to 76%. So in one sense, that's good news. They actually increased from 75 to 76. That's one percentage point increase. However, their rate at 75 has been fairly static the last 3 or 4 years, and that's below the state average. That's the lowest of our 3 high schools. Mm-hmm. When you delve deeper into the data, you see that all of their subgroups are performing lower than the state average, not just minorities. But minorities are performing well below the state average. So we need to figure out what we can do differently at Vero Beach High School. They are doing some things differently there this year. They're tracking students differently. Guidance counselors have been given some additional resources and that kind of thing. But, you know, we need to see long-term what their plan is and if we can assist them to improve that. Sebastian River High School was where we saw a big drop. They were at 85% 2 years ago, and last year, with our corrections, it drops to 78%. So that's still a pretty significant decline. They've been in the 80s, at that mid-80s range, for 3 or 4 of the last 5 years. So to me, it's more like what was different about that senior class, because it's all based on one senior class. So we've been pulling data to see how many kids got certificates of completion, how many kids went for GEDs, that kind of thing. Were there coding errors where kids, if a kid leaves our district, leaves that school, and doesn't enroll in another school somewhere else, that we don't get confirmation that they move to Denver and enroll in a school, then they're coded as a dropout. So we have to make sure we're doing the best with our paperwork. That's a precipitous decline, though. 7% is something that, you know, we're concerned about. Their subgroups actually perform better than Vero Beach High School, and they're closer to the state average. Don't always want to be at the state average, like you're doing better. But so we want to see what exactly happened with that cohort, and then we're monitoring this year's cohort to see what we're looking at. The charter high slipped from 94 to 91. In the paper, I think they went from 94 to 90. That seems like a lot, but keep in mind their graduating class is much smaller.
So that might be 2 kids.
2 or 3 kids can make a big difference. when you go from 94 to 91. It could be just one or two kids. So dialogue with the leadership at each of those schools about, hey, you know, what was different about your class last year? What are you doing this year? And, you know, but long term, we need to look at some things we do systemically. You know, are kids getting to high school already one or two grade levels behind, and that's going to really hamper their efforts to graduate on time? Are there things we can do in elementary school and middle school to make sure they're more prepared when they show up? So, you know, that's kind of how we're attacking it. And I can give you much more information in the future on that.
Under my matters, I think it was at a meeting, or it might have actually been at one of the workshops. I was very excited that we adopted the new software and to help guidance counselors for, if a student was going to apply for a few colleges, the guidance counselor helps them. This is part of the software. Get ready. Do you have this? Do you have that? Do you have your resume? Do you have required material? And this new software helped help the guidance counselors and the students, because if students don't have support at home, the guidance counselors do step in, which I think raised the question for me was, because we look at teachers and we look at support staff, but I just was curious about how we're supporting our guidance counselors and the number of students per counselor, and how can we help them, because that might be, and I know it's not mental health, but that might be the front. With an intimate talk, the first indicator. I think it's a very important role in our district, especially at the high school level. So I don't know if you have any information.
Well, I actually saw this on the agenda, so I pulled the numbers so we can see where we're at the different schools with our ratios.
Especially if we're, when we see where funds are spent, to make sure that spending it in the right areas that are really make a difference.
Thank you.
Do you want me to take a second?
If you could, thank you. So these are the ratios. Basically it's a caseload, so to speak, for the guidance counselors. If you remember earlier this year, we added an additional guidance counselor to Vero Beach High School. So that ratio, BBHS main campus at 3.52:1, was much higher before we added that additional guidance counselor. So, you know, that was something that we did earlier this year. So these numbers reflect that. The based on my past history as a high school principal, you're typically at about 400. You know, most high schools across America, the guidance counselor load is about 400. If you look at the bottom, I asked, Dr. Martinez to give me the breakdown, and she put a comment there right now. I don't know what the ACSA stands for, but School Counselors Association, probably.
Yeah.
2.50:1. So that's coming from the trade. Of course, they're going to want the ratio to be as low as possible. Florida's average, when that ASCA recommendation came out, was 4.34:1.
Okay.
So in most of our schools, we're lower than the state average of 4.34:1. Again, just because we're lower than the state average doesn't mean we're good. You know, it probably needs to be as low as possible. As you can see, a couple of those middle schools, especially Sebastian River Middle, has a very high number because Sebastian River Middle School grew more than we anticipated this year.
If one were to be very into statistics, one could make the correlation that the lower the ratio, the higher the dropout rate.
Before this year...
It's not.
I would say before this year, that ratio at BBHS was much higher.
I think it's kind of the left-hand murderer type thing. It's, but in some ways, that was a way of saying it's somewhat frustrating that we have where we have it best is where we're having our greatest issues. So, I don't envy you in getting
Conversely, if we wanted to argue, we could say, well, maybe that's a place that needs the most support because that's where the most challenges are.
Right, and maybe we need more.
Or a different kind of support.
Naviance or, different paths that inspire hope.
Well, one of the things that, talking with other districts, lowering the guidance counselor ratio is one thing, but placing other types of support in the building might be a difference as well.
Like social worker?
Well, it could be a social worker. In San Lucie County, we had a lot of success with graduation coaches at the high schools. So we've talked about that and kind of come to a decision pretty soon here in the spring as to whether we want to pursue that for next year or not. You know, that's someone whose main job is they get a list of all the kids who are at risk, so to speak, 9 through 12, not just 12th graders, but 9 through 12, and their job is to do everything they can to make sure those kids meet their graduation requirements. And it in St. Lucie County, I saw high school graduation coaches going to houses, meeting with the parents, going to houses and dragging the kid out of bed, taking them to school. It's not in the job description, but you know that's the kind of stuff we saw. And at certain schools, it worked really, really well. Like Fort Pierce Central High School, their graduation rate climbed. That's why it's an A school. It's a Title I high school. It's an A school. Their minority graduation rate is higher than the state average. It's up there. But it's true testament to the graduation coaches. But then again, not to get too granular, but just because someone has the title of graduation coach doesn't mean they're going to be that effective. It can kind of be the person in the job, too, that you know, had that impact and you know, that kind of thing. So adding another guidance counselor may be a good idea, or adding different types of support may be a better idea. So we'll see. But I didn't really know what you were going to ask.
I just really was curious because to me, and it's just personal experience, it seems like that person is the go-to person to tie it all together. And I'm glad that you brought some solutions. I think we should give it thought because it would be like this is what I would equate to. You have a reading class and you have one or two students that are way here on the left side, and the teacher has to stop and refocus, you know, always has to stop to refocus for them. So if you're saying there's maybe one person who pulls the whatever, you know, I don't want to say burden of work, but something that's taking away the norm where, you know, we can pull all these in the hop, we can help Susie and Tommy and this and keep this going, but I've got to stop because I've got to do a lot of work here. I don't know what the answer is, but that was the reason why I put on the discussion.
And I think when you talk about that specifically, I think it also ties in with your ESE support because those students that have IEPs for math, you know, the students that have IEP only get support for the core classes. And so if you're not reading well and you have an IEP, you go into science class, no support, you know, that's not a core class. And so you may need reading and math for other classes, but all of a sudden there's no support. So and I don't know that what role the guidance counselors would have in that. I see this issue as important to bring up because if the board has awareness that we need this kind of support for students, then this could be moving forward a priority in our budgeting process. Because what tends to happen, you know, just to get one guidance counselor, since I've been on the board, 7-6 years ago, we pulled that item on the budget to try to get guidance counselor, then we were told no. So it's an issue of creating the awareness and being advocates, because I know that, for example, in my own personal experience, when my kids were in the schools, these guidance counselors have so many kids, they have no idea who the kids are half the time. And they go in there when they're supposed to get information, and it's just a number. They can't, I mean, think about it. If you have to oversee 490 kids, what kind of relationship are you going to have with the kids? And a lot of this is about relationships. Yes. So it's us being aware, and when we budget, asking those questions. How are our kids doing? Do we have enough? Can we add more? Or are we going to have graduation coaches? So I commend you, Dr. Rendell, for you know bringing that idea forward, because I think we have to do something.
Yeah, and that's why I thought, you know, because I may be wrong on the numbers, but I think like the average teacher for an actual core class would be, with their 7 classes at high school, is around 157-ish, or 54. And so they're spending an hour or 45 minutes, whatever the class time is. And, you know, they get a relationship, and that's a lot of numbers, and they have all those classes. So then, now that I see these numbers, I think you bring up, where's the relationship? And there may be, and that relationship may just because it's the law of average, may be more of a student initiation, and not every student's initiating. And I'm not saying that's happening, but I'm glad it's out there, and maybe Dr. Rundell can give it some thought for solutions, or obviously it involves money. If there is a, you know, what that descriptive job would be for each high school at least, because a lot of that is transition into jobs, certificates, careers, certificate courses, and or colleges. And some children may never dream that they could go to college, and the guidance counselor can make a difference, whether it's to find financial aid. You know, those are all the things that guidance counselor. So that's really my purpose. And if the board will indulge me, maybe Dr. Rundell can bring.
Yeah, what I'd like to do.
Give it some thought.
Is maybe bring back some options that I've seen in other districts that have been successful, and maybe some that haven't. Because, for example, both Brevard and St. Lucie, both to kind of release or give the guidance counselors some relief from being testing coordinators. Because a lot of our guidance counselors at the secondary level, if you talk to them, they spend a lot of time coordinating and administering state standardized tests. So both those districts added testing coordinators at high schools and middle schools. And that they did not see the return on investment from that. The guidance counselors were relieved a little bit with their role in testing, but they still kind of had to help organize and hand out tests and collect tests and that kind of stuff. So they didn't really see a large work decrease or workload related to testing didn't really change. So I wouldn't propose that, but I will bring it and show you like how much it costs and that kind of thing. But both those districts did not see a return on investment on a testing coordinator relieving guidance counselors so they could be go guidance counselors. It's more support in the area of a graduation coach or a social worker or something like that. Typically has more impact, especially on those kids who are at risk. But I can put that on my list.
I hate to increase your list, but just...
we're knocking some stuff off.
No, okay. Yeah. But that was my thought, and thank you for that.
All set. Thank you.
We've already done all the rounds before we turn it over to... we'll go through the board committee reports. Anything else for discussion? Board committee reports?
My first meeting on MPO, I guess, was more eventful than most. They approved the consolidated plan, traffic plan for, I think, 2030 or something like that. And the widening of 43rd Avenue came up. And that's super exciting. It was decided to follow the traffic engineer's decision and widen 43rd Avenue, and I must say I'm super excited they're going to widen 510 because that's ridiculous. Anyway, that's it for the committee. So they approved their consolidated traffic plan. They're also in the final phases, and it's actually funded the interchange at Oslo Road for 95. So that's something that's going to happen.
For what year?
No, it's a long way.
It's, I think, like in the 2020s, somewhere in there, in the middle of there. It's at least 7 years now. I know that because there was mention of the way it was funded and that those budget monies would be available.
But it's on the schedule?
It is. It is, and funded. And, so those are the two things that have to happen. The DOT is on board. One thing that may affect us, and just trying to think of how this, because I sit in these meetings and I try to think of how this affects education, it is a truck-designated exchange. Mm-hmm. So if we were to do trucking and distribution as a thing, and I know that economic development people are trying to bring that type of business to the county, at least that road will be there. So if we're looking for sites in South County for high schools with vocational programs and trucking and distribution, the interchange is compliant. Stretching. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to justify my existence at that meeting. Other than a citizen who lives.
Why do we have a vote on it? I never figure out.
Yeah.
We talked about sidewalks.
Right.
I need the sidewalk on 8th Street to go through. I need that to run on. I need more sidewalks.
66th Avenue or Lateral A?
8th Street is supposed to go all the way up Kings Highway.
Okay. Lateral A.
That's on the project list. I need that one.
Then I can walk here.
All right, let's not get off track.
Yeah. All right. So that's RTO. Planning and zoning, that's it.
Okay. Yeah. Any other committees?
No, there was nothing relevant to us on Indian River Shores planning.
I went to Sebastian Planning and Zoning last Thursday. I find them interesting. I don't know why, but there was nothing close to a school. However, there was big concern at the Tiki Bar, having a parking lot on the side over here, and they did use the example of children crossing mid-street on Indian River.
A lot of kids cross there.
Yes, well, to play corn toss it. Whatever that is, Tiki Bar.
Right.
But anyway, so that was
children
the...
play corn?
Cornhole.
Cornhole. It is family friendly in that area.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. But, so that was it. Nothing, the same thing. But every once in a while, they'll have something around the school.
Yeah. Right.
So I do find... But I place fit a... Well, let me tell you another reason why I really enjoy going to Sebastian Planning and Zoning, because it is a night meeting. And just like our meeting, you'll see all the students from Charter come down because it's a government meeting. And I like to spend time with the kids before or after and sign off and let them know what's going on. But also so that when something does come up, you know, they value or they validate our opinion, because, you know, it's very hard to let it go by, monitor the packet, and then all of a sudden come forward and they'll, you know so I also get a seat. What's going on in town? You have to do follow up now with Dr. Mandel?
Okay. Thank you. All right, so I have that list of things I'm supposed to be working on. So I wanted to revisit that list.
It's getting thicker.
Well, yes and no.
Okay. It's just revolving.
Yeah, I believe there are some.
Oh,
extra.
Yeah, I have some extra. Yeah.
Thank you. So these are in chronological order, except that the third page, if you notice the third page, if you want to flip to the third page, those are all completed.
Oh, great.
So we're going to remove those from the list. We've done all those different things.
Right.
So I didn't want to just not have them attached, though, and say, oh, we did a bunch of stuff, and you have at least take that. So. But going back to the first page and going in chronological order, so way back on July 28th, we had a discussion about student absenteeism. We had a lot of back and forth about a possible failure due to absence policy, and we talked about maybe piloting that at the secondary schools, both high schools, both comprehensive high schools for this semester. Subsequent to our meeting in July, I've had several discussions with both the high school principals and several other people. We're not sold on that. We're not sold as that being a solution. Mm-hmm. And so we dropped that as one of the things we were going to pursue several weeks or months ago, and I hadn't shared that with you. So I wanted to make sure that I shared that with you. And, you know, instead we'd rather focus on different initiatives as far as improving attendance rather than a punitive measure, to see if we can't come up with ways to improve attendance that aren't necessarily punitive. So if it's okay with the board, I'm going to take that one off the list and just, you know, when we do data analysis, we're going to look at attendance. And if we see, you know, some issues that we need to address, we'll address those. But we're not going to put in place that pilot policy of, you know, if you miss more than 9 absences in a semester, you're going to fail. You know, we weren't sold on that being effective, so we dropped that.
We had that previously, and then that was changed.
Years ago, yes, sir.
So now you can miss all you want as long as you pass the test.
Correct. And, you know, we talked about maybe bringing that back, because some of our neighboring districts, Brevard has it, St. Lucie doesn't. I looked at some other districts around the state. Some have it, some don't. High-performing districts have it. High-performing districts don't. Low-performing districts have it. Low-performing districts don't. So, you know, we really couldn't see data to show us that it was effective. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and I think tied to that, I mean, I can understand the rationale, because the teachers get frustrated and that's something they can hold over the kids,
right.
You know. But I think continuing to explore school climate, because I think part of that problem is if kids don't want to be in school for whatever reason, they're so behind that they don't want to feel stupid, so they don't come in, or they're being bullied, or, you know, the classroom management is a mess. I mean, there are different issues. And I think one of the things we had talked about with Dr. Adams before she left was having some focus groups with these kids and getting a sense for, you know, what is happening that you were disengaged, that you're not coming to school. Because we can hypothesize all we want. I can say, well, maybe they're being bullied. Well, maybe they're this. But who knows if we don't talk to them. But I think that going to punishment is not the way we solve problems. So I'm glad we're
here. That was discussed when we originally brought this up, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
We wanted to get with those students that had all those absences and find out what the reasons were. Did we do that?
We haven't met with the chronically absent students. Okay. I did ask the Student Advisory Council members back in October their take on this. Mm-hmm. And their response was they didn't think a punitive policy would be the answer. Mm-hmm. They said that classes need to be more interesting, kids need to see more value in their instruction, that kind of thing. Now, these are the kids who come to school almost every day, and you know,
that's not the ones that I don't think
I agree.
That's not the ones I'm talking about.
Right.
The ones that don't come every day. They miss the bulletin about the donuts for free. And they don't show up.
Right.
So is there
we need to find out why they're...
We can do that.
We have this restorative justice thing where we bring the parent and the kid and
right.
everybody. Why can't we do that to these people too? I mean to have that meeting with them and find out what the problem is, because just like Ms. Jimenez said, we can speculate on what the problems are all day long. Unless we hear them say it,
right?
We've missed the boat.
And I wanted to, because I'm not sure what the, you know, I don't want to say in my day, we called the truancy officer. I don't think that's the title of the gentleman. But wasn't there a position created and or empty in somebody had just filled it last year.
We still have
those. And what does that do? What do they do? Because I would think that would be the person would be going around doing this is your 15th absence. Is your mother home? You know, I don't know. Do we do that anymore? I mean, like
I
said.
Do you know what a bus is?
So they still work with the chronically absent students.
They do. Yes. So there
right.
should be a place for information.
Hey, so there's more than one person?
I believe there's more than one person. I know Mr. Seymour. I'm not sure. I believe there's more than one.
That does that?
I'm not sure. They're 100% sure of their title because it's new to me. We didn't have anywhere else. So.
All right.
But they were attendance officers, weren't they?
Yeah. And for lack of knowledge, I called it truancy, but that's correct. And I don't know how many we have and what they're doing, but that would be the people that would make the contact.
Yeah, I believe there's more than one, but that would be someone that could help us set up that study group, so to speak, and go interview those kids and see what they have to say.
So could we find out how many attendance officers we have? Is it one per school, or
no.
does it depend on the size of the school, or is it one for the whole district?
18,000 kids in three, you know.
To be honest, I think it's more like that. I think there's
yeah,
two or three
yeah.
people
and,
total.
And so, you know,
yeah.
people can't work magic either.
Right.
So that's something where, but could we not then, it's what I'm hearing, remove this from the list until we at least just get a little more info on the direction that we've given.
Well, it'll be a different item on the list now.
If it's a problem, we don't want to remove from the list. Right?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to be
until
a slightly,
we get the information.
It's going to be a slightly different
yeah,
approach.
Yeah, absenteeism will be made.
Topic. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Maybe not policy.
Yeah. Right.
Policy on
the
student.
Yep, so we can say.
Okay.
Because I'll be working on it. So.
Sure.
The next item on the list was the to give you guys an update on the charter school mediation. And Mr. Gress already gave you an update on the charter school mediation regarding the 0.6.
Okay.
So, the next item on the list is an update on the desegregation order and the pursuit of unitary status. So, the last time we met, we talked briefly about the outside firm that we had contacted to work with. If you want to take them and
yeah.
pass them around. And again, I believe there are extras. So we'll get the extras with them.
Thank you.
I had mentioned that Mr. Borkowski with the Hush Blackwell firm was who we had contracted with. And so what you have in front of you is the first communication that we have from him. It's not a report with any findings, it's kind of a report of his work so far and the costs associated with it.
So it's more like an invoice.
Right. Right. So no report yet. But as you can see, the work that he had done in just that short time frame, if you go all the way to the last page, $13,000. We're expecting another communication like this within days to cover what he's done up to this point. And then from that, we've actually asked him to give us an estimate of how much it would be for him to complete the report, so we know exactly what kind of dollar figures we're talking about.
Mrs. Jimenez.
Yeah. You know, my question around this continues to be, he is doing the legal side of this. With all the technology that we have, where is our side with the documentation of what we've been doing since 1964? This is all kind of legalese here. And I think that one of the issues that I heard out in the community was, if you're asking, has the District of Indian River County been making the best effort to be in compliance with the DSEG order since 1964? Why do you need to suit up and get a lawyer to do that for you when you have all the records and all the information? Your staff should be able to do that. So where is the part of, where is the data for the school district? I don't see that here. This is all like legal stuff. But
when I look at this, what I see is he's showing us what he has reviewed so far. And it's different records about different things that we've done or not done, you know, that kind of thing. And so the next communication I believe we're going to get is, again, going to be more of a review of what we've done so far, and then a list of all the data that he would need to review to give us that report as to whether we've done what we need to do, where we are, so to speak, in regards to the DSEG order, and what our chances would be, I guess, of pursuing unitary status, that kind of thing. And again, going back to the conversation we had several weeks ago, when I talk to other districts that have pursued unitary status, some successful, some not, they all, especially the ones that were successful, said, you need to find someone outside of your district that has experience with this, that to do the research to see where you stand, and then see what, you know, your chances are of pursuing unitary status and that kind of thing.
What school districts has he worked with?
St. John's.
Okay.
And they are currently in pursuing unitary status there. I'm not sure what stage they're at. And
Seminole. He also did some work on the other coast of Florida. It was either Manatee or Pinellas.
Pinellas has been a disaster.
Well, it was very many years ago that they came out with their unitary status, or the ones that I need to remember.
I think that's something worth reminding the board of, and I can get Ms. Thane to give you the newspaper article. They came out of unitary status, and their schools went back to being even more segregated, so all the African-American kids were in the worst schools, mm-hmm. and they were doing even worse than they were doing before. So I think we have to be mindful of what the implications are. Are we ready to serve those students so that they can be successful? It's not just, and I think you used some good words last time, it's not getting out from under it.
Right.
It's a realistic, holistic approach to making sure we serve all our subgroups.
If I could just weigh in, because I'm starting to discuss with some people, and you know, some people are more receptive to at least the open discussion in the community. And I can't speak for the board, but my thought is that we're in the same place. First of all, being revolving board, and also being revolving, not anymore, but longevity coming up.
Not elected, but the average is 3 years.
Where we were, the community is used to less action, maybe non-action, and there's probably not a lot of statistics or maybe reports that these people can glean, and instead of going at it, poking at it blindly, you know, to that we've the thought, first of all, the sentiment of this board was to say it's not the get out from under, it's that it's really the journey. Whether we reach it with the court case and get to the end where we reach unitary status to apply, we're nowhere near even applying. We wouldn't spend that. I tried to explain to somebody in the public. I wouldn't, as the as a steward of taxes, even begin spending money for to file court papers or anything like that unless we've done and it historically have value now and time of doing things right.
Yeah.
And so that it's, if it's status quo, it doesn't get better. If you look towards unity and try to first, instead of poking a stick in the dark, get somebody such as Dr. Rendell has hired to, who has specialty to gather what we really need and not waste time. And then we have also, I'm sure we have boxes, microfilm, or nothing. A lot, you know, he's inherited a lot of, which he can only start from scratch and see what we have or have not, or mostly have not done, and then say, this is what we need to do to be within the order, to be within the order. Follow the order. This is what we have to do. This is how we have to report. So for me, I think that instead of, because we talk about people and how many guidance counselors and how many, whether it's an admin even or an executive secretary or somebody pulling that stuff, to be pulling stuff that we found out through somebody's interpretation we didn't need, that's a lot of soft-term dollar. I'd rather have, for me, I think I'd rather, it's not lawyer up, it's more of getting somebody with specialties saying, go down this path and not get distracted. That's kind of how I'm looking at this, is my interpretation, not a lawyer up thing, but somebody who says, go down this path and then reports to us the path, what they found, here where we're at, now moving forward, this is where you need to be. Is that your intent?
Yeah, I think if the person that we hired wasn't a lawyer, if it was some company, some consulting firm, then it wouldn't be raising the red flag of we're hiring a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this is who the other districts who have pursued this have said, this is, you know, what you do. You hired someone that is expert in this area, and that's what this person and his firm are experts in. So it happens to be a law firm. If it was a consulting firm or some other kind of business, you know, maybe the word lawyer, you know, wouldn't have been such a red flag, but he's a lawyer.
So I do have an extra question. And so is this a type of firm that not only would do this, but would we have to, you know, after, you know, I don't want to say 10 years of we found out what we're doing, we create historic value and show that we're doing it right with the end game to make sure that the students and or employees, that are in the order are addressed, that we have the right fair number and we're doing the right thing. Is this then later down the road as we, you know, because we have, I'm guessing we have a lot of empty holes in the historic value of what we've done, which is probably the pushback from the community, and it may be a trust issue, because if we haven't done it, and then that's understandable, if we haven't done the right thing or haven't, or we've been incomplete, then why, you know, this, there is a pushback, and I totally understand. I think we all can understand that. So would this be a firm again, far down the road, but could take us the final step, or then at that point we find somebody, you know, and that's this is too early, I'm just curious.
Well, I think I'll let Suzanne, you know, Mr. DeGrist, if you can kind of answer that, but yes, my understanding is yes, this is the same group that could,
okay,
could be employed to, if we decided to pursue it.
And that's good for continuity. It's then you don't want to take the boxes of stuff and turn it over to
right.
somebody. So I don't have a problem with that, but I would imagine, and I do agree with you, Ms. Jimenez, where that public trust, it does look like that. So, I mean, maybe we should, we're going to have to extend our single services outside these discussions, you know, speaking to people. I will try to... Gifford is my district. I know we're not real district-orientated, but it is my district, and I will, you know, certainly try to talk to a couple of people and try to extend myself more in discussions. And I do understand that it comes with other boards and other superintendents' behavior history, lack of baggage, but we'll try to say that in an earnest attempt we are trying to move forward. Mm-hmm. Can't fix the bad, but
because I think that's important, because when this started being addressed in the public square, it seemed like it was a conversation that was happening through newspaper articles, which was just totally inappropriate. And in the past, you know, when we were starting to look at some of these issues, we as a board met with the NAACP and had a conversation. And I'm surprised that we have yet to do that, because what traditionally happens is their leader meets with our leader, and if their leader is not getting along with our leader, then nobody's meeting, and then we just get the, you know. And there is a place for us as a board to be a part of that conversation, so it doesn't become a he said, she said. But we're together, we're hearing their concerns, and they're hearing our thoughts on the issue, and they can be assured that we are not just trying to get out from under unitary. You know, it's almost like sometimes you need, it's relationship.
Sure, and I think that might help, because Dr. Rendell has been meeting regularly, and, you know, conveying, you know, the board sentiment of doing this, but he's also taking, with that meeting, I would imagine, all those, as I said, feelings, and they're real, and the relationship, he's handling that, our sentiments, and, you know, it wouldn't hurt, maybe at some point we had a board meeting with the NAACP. I don't think it would hurt. I think it's really actually appropriate. That's my personal opinion. I wouldn't want to stop your monthlies, but
sure.
I'm just thinking that we should have a meeting.
I think that's been brought up before, that, you know, that we, as we move forward with this, I mean, I understand that this is a separate matter because we need to have an understanding of the legal situation, things like that, but to board member Jimenez's point, it's about relationships, and it's about restoring a relationship, or building a relationship, rather. So I think that it's been said before that all stakeholders and all affected parties should be at the same table at the same time, rather than, you know, as you said, via memorandum or, you know, writ. You know, it'd be a great idea to do, you know, just as you said. And I think I'm hopeful that as soon as, or even concurrent with this process, that we would begin doing that with, you know, meet with everyone.
Well, I think the original plan in my mind was we get this group, they do a third-party analysis, a neutral analysis. They come, they bring the findings back to us, and then we sit down with all the parties and say, okay, these are the findings, this is where we are, how do we move forward? This process, in all honesty, is taking longer and is more in-depth than I anticipated it being. So if we don't want to necessarily wait until we get all that information, if we want to start having dialogue, you know, organization to organization, we can do that. You know, but you know, I was going to ask Mr. Gressa just to make sure that, you know, that I characterize what we have in front of us accurately, and, you know, what we're expecting from the firm coming up.
Yes, I believe your characterizations were spot on as far as the status as of today. Moving forward, we're anticipating receiving a budget of what it will take to get to that final analysis from Mr. Borkowski that says, here's where, for instance, where you've done great, here's where perhaps you need some help, and here's some holes, here's, you know, data that just doesn't exist. We need a solid budget of what that will cost. So the superintendent, you know, has an idea of what to bring back to you. And then once we have that information, you then have the ability to say, here's strategy for moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Just a clarification. So you talked about yet another budget. So at what point are we going to see an actual written report that says, this is what you've done, this is what you need to do? Is there another budget that has to come into place before we do that? Because again, we
sure.
have some information.
Yes.
So is our stuff? Our stuff. So basically, what we're saying, and not saying, is that we have nothing.
district has no information.
So what we have so far is someone that's looking at different orders and different, you know, communications and saying, well, to see if this has been followed, he's making a list of the different data he's going to want to have to look at to see if we've done this and if we've done that and what, you know, this communication happened on X date in 1987, you know. So it's my understanding he's going to present us a list of everything he needs to analyze in order to give us our full report. And based on what we've already received in the bill, mm-hmm. Mr. Gress and I have directed him to give us a budget, mm-hmm. so we know what we're facing. You know, because we need to know how much it's going to cost to get that report.
Which ballpark?
Why?
I'd say 40. Just looking at this,
I'm betting $100,000.
Well, you can't go more than $49,999.
Yeah, actually, you know, I don't want to belabor this, but I am still at a loss. I remember when we started this conversation, we got a memo from Ms. DiAgresta that talked about the list of things that are in the DSEG order that we were supposed to have done. So I'm at a loss as to why we can't look at that and internally look at the list. Did we do this? Yes or no? And we have to pay $540 an hour for somebody to do that for us. Isn't there stuff that we have already? We have the minority report. We have minority reports from so many years. You know, I'm just a little confused that everything has to be funneled through a law firm.
And this is, this is my take on it. That's an issue that you're preparing. What have we done? What will we need to do, and where will we go? So take that relationship out. I agree with you. I think we really should meet with the NAACP as a group for a listening session. You know, let's assume we did everything wrong. And I really hate to say that, but let's assume we did everything wrong, that we didn't do anything right till today. Why don't we listen and hear what the concerns are? And that I do agree parallel lines where the superintendent can hear, where he doesn't have to just listen and engage with the NAACP, which I want you to still be a correspondent, but I think that as a group, we are the board, and we should meet. And with the premise of a workshop to, just have... I have been on the board 2 years, and we have not... as a board met with the NAACP, and yet we exist in a county that has an order, desegregation order. So I just think in a sense of fairness that we should... Now, we met with the charter schools because they had problems with the liaison. They had problems with the liaison. Prior superintendents maybe didn't even have any interaction with the NAACP. Didn't meet with them. So... I just think that I commend our new superintendent for meeting and reopening that door, but I think as a board, you know, we need to really, at least a discussion. I don't know in what form that would be, whether it's it has to obviously be a public meeting because it will be all of us, but I feel that if when we had the charter schools, you know, we didn't have charter students and charter teachers come up and talk. We had a workshop, I believe. And therefore, all parties were able to discuss things. And it was, recorded, and I feel that it's public and we advertise. And I feel that that's something that we should have that thing for the NAACP, because I think we owe it to them. Because... as I said, I've been on the board 2 years and we haven't met. And it probably, I really hate to say, because of lack of data and because of the assumption that we haven't done much, it's really more going to be a listening session on our side of the table. But I think that they would be, I would hope they would be happy that we're willing to listen and begin relationships.
Sure.
Okay, there we go.
Keep this one for
good.
Process, yes. Just to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. Okay, so it seems as though this invoice covers the phase where he didn't know what he didn't know, so now he knows what he didn't know. The next phase will be addressing what the holes in what the consultant didn't know and arriving at a current strategic situation of here's what it is, And that at some point, perhaps in maybe March, we can have a more meaningful, there'll be a completed report, along with a pro forma budget of sorts, based on other cases around the state or similar situations, and not including whatever operating costs, or maybe including whatever operating costs it would take to remedy the situation produced by internal sources. I'm probably being super aggressive on that, as far as this timeline goes, but I mean, it seems as though we've commissioned this study. The study's taken a bit longer and is a little more in-depth. If I'm looking through this, I do know that, or well, I don't know that I've heard that we have, there are certain missing documents that are incredibly important, court documents, things like that, that they just, the records are no more. Like, I think even the original judgment or something is missing.
I don't know that I've heard
you,
that.
From 1964, not the 68 or 68. You got that?
Got
very good.
I
good work, Mr. Searcy. I guess we owe you about $2,430. $2,430. Just don't draft us an email.
I have a file like this that I can play and share, too.
But
$500.
But, I mean, Dr. Rendell, is that an accurate statement of kind of what this means, what the next phases are, and where we can go?
I think you're on track with most of that.
Okay.
I don't think this represents him or his firm being done with figuring out what they need to analyze. That's what we're expecting. As I started with, we're expecting one more communication that says, you know, an invoice, basically, of what they've done since they sent this one, and then so we'll get a bill, so to speak, for what they've done to this point, and then a list of this is what you need to be able to give to us so we can do our analysis. And that's what we said, well, you need to give us a budget for how much that analysis is going to cost and a timeline of when that will be done. So
this is the analysis to decide how much the analysis is going
to
cost?
Yes, you paid $370.50, 1.3 hours. So that they could analyze, they could prepare to analyze the needs for India.
Well, that's a Southern thing, because you have to be fixing to do things.
You know, we've asked the superintendent to get this done.
We have.
So we can move this thing along.
Yes.
I think we've got to give him a little bit of rope and say, go hang yourself.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if I want rope, but yeah.
He's already at $13,000. I mean, yeah. You know, we need to move on. And quit beating the dang dead horse.
And again, let's get back, because we want progress. We want ultimately to be doing the right thing. And that's what I go out in the community and tell people. This, the purpose of this is to make sure we're doing the right thing. No matter how the end of I thought you meant like, yay.
No, I wasn't doing that.
Okay, so the result of this is that we're going to have a meeting with the NAACP, and the superintendent is going to keep doing what he's doing, and we're going to get some other invoice.
Oh, no, he's not going to keep doing what he's doing. He's going to do better.
Yeah.
We're going to have the meeting. But you know what I think we need to do? I think we need to ask those folks. We know where we're coming up short. We have the order in front of us. Let them put their little list together and say, this is what you're not doing. Then we have our meeting.
Let's ask them to do that.
I mean, they're saying, well, you're not doing anything. Well, tell me what we're not doing.
Right. And
give me your list of stuff we're not doing. Well, we know what the order is.
And in defense, they, you know, can tell each one of us privately, but let's have a meeting where they
sure
can come.
Sure. Well, that's similar to what Charter did. They came and told us what we weren't doing and what their benefit was.
Would it be during a board, the first Tuesday of a month on the morning of, you know how we used to do, and I think we had talked about this, the morning workshops. So is on a board day in the future, when they get their list together and they agree to the meeting, which I hope they will, that a 9 o'clock meeting in the morning on the day that we have a discussion meeting? Is that acceptable for people?
I'm just saying
we have to give direction, because let's have a meeting,
well,
and then we're going to have
questions.
A secretary call, and none of us know, and it's just complete.
If it's a Tuesday, that's a school board day, we should be kind of flexible if we can.
Of course, and that would be great. So,
okay.
Good?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. The next item is an item we've discussed several times, internal auditor reporting directly to the board, or the old auditor committee and audit committee. And, you know, I don't feel like I got good direction on what our final outcome or final decision was. Am I supposed to draft a position for an internal auditor, job description, bring it to the board for approval? Are we to go back to the audit committee and begin to set that up, because we don't have one right now?
Sure. And then I'll have to go from memory. I think that we had mixed feelings. I guess there wasn't clear direction, because some people wanted to go back to the board, and some people wanted to mix internal order as a permanent position.
I want a gunslinger. I want somebody that comes in, says, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and tells us where we're missing.
Not on payroll. Like
not
a subcontractor.
Not a government employee. Not a lawyer, by the way. That was a joke, by the way. But not an employee, but a consultant. Come in here, and you're going to have a free hand at all the contracts that we've had. I mean, if you look at some of the contracts we've had, we've missed the boat by hundreds of thousands of dollars on the ones we can see. And if we have a gunslinger that comes in here, they can look at all the contracts that we have and find out if we have overpaid or whatever. But we need some more looks.
Right.
And the audit committee, I wasn't here when they had the audit committee, but that's just another committee. If you want something done, you don't turn it over to
the
committee.
The audit committee, one of their projects, one of their very first projects was facilities and construction.
Okay.
I hired RS, was it McGladrey?
McGladrey. Yeah.
McGladrey. It's basically an accounting firm. What you're doing is hiring accounting firm to do internal audits.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it. And they came in, issued a report. Mm-hmm. And it costs money.
Okay.
So, I mean, you do it again.
You're
going to do
the
exact same thing we did a few years later, which is fine.
Did it recover any money? Do you recall?
I can't remember. It was...
Was it at least cost neutral, or was it...
It was really about figuring out...
processes and internal controls. We talk about an accounting, we talk about internal controls. Well, things like that, and that it was the processes, and that's what it was.
Did we comply with the processes? I mean...
And they recommend changes, they recommend implementations, which they implemented. And so all those processes changed quite a bit after that. There were some changes to our bidding processes, things like that.
You know, when we changed offices, I gave Ms. Stang the stack of all of the audits that were done during... So you might want to take a look at that, because, you know, something, for example, Mr. Searcy is concerned about contracts, the way we do contracts, and we've all kind of feel that urgency because of what's been happening with the attestations and everything. So we could have our audit committee's first audit to look at the contracts. I have a problem with creating another position that's going to report to a board of 5 members.
Right.
We're all going to have different opinions about where they want their gunslinger to point. And that's going to create a lot of havoc. We want to be removed from that as a board. You can't become each board member's individual witch hunt.
Right.
You can't. That would just be detrimental to the way the board would work. But with the audit committee, the way it worked before, we got all of those reports and were able to make changes in the system based on the results. And I hear that there's a consensus. Everybody's concerned about contracts. So that is the next logical, you know, if we're going to do that, go at it on those contracts and see how we can make them better.
So so your consensus is audit committee?
Absolutely.
Mr. Susan?
Well, obviously mine's not, but we agree many, many times, but on this one we don't. But if contracts happen to be the issue, we can bring that gunslinger in to look at every contract that we put together. I mean, we 5 of us and the superintendent say, all right, now, Mr. and Ms. Audit, we want you to look at all the contracts, every contract that we have. Did we comply with the contract? Did we overpay? Did we underpay? Is there any shenanigans going on? You don't have a committee. I don't agree with the committee, but that's okay.
That's okay. That's false.
Sure. And I see the point Mr. Searcy is trying to make is that he wants the, it seems as though, he wants the gunslinger to focus down and at the board's direction. And I think there's a good balance of that actually works with the committee. It would be something similar to the way planning and zoning works with the county commission. We don't do anything but make a recommendation to the board of county commissioners, and then they act. So one way that it may work is if we did each have an appointee to this committee, they would make a recommendation to this board on what the internal auditor, or it's an external auditor, but what the auditor would focus on, what internal operations the external auditor would focus on. And then this board would then fund that study with a known endpoint and dollar point. And that way this board could decide which processes. Right now it makes sense to contract, but maybe we bring in an HR person who thinks that pay and leave and vacation buyout is a real issue and we need to focus on that risk. And then the committee brings that together and they bring that back to us and we authorize whatever. And then we as a board, corporate, can authorize whatever. I know that it seems like another layer, but to Ms. Jimenez's point, I have a bunch of pet peeves that I would probably stick this internal auditor all over, and that wouldn't be fair to the rest of the board. So that's why I'm more comfortable with the nominated piece. The board makes the final decision as to what the auditor, what studies are commissioned by the auditor, and that way we can also budget for it, you know, with a fixed dollar amount rather than just saying, okay, we're going to have an auditor who makes 80 grand a year, a contract for 80,000.
Can we begin the process at the next meeting? Can we do that?
Setting up the audit committee as soon as possible.
That sounds great. I did have a question for the expert over there.
Yes.
I would believe. Doesn't the CAF, in a way, doesn't the CAFA...
I started to say that earlier.
Yeah.
We have state attorneys. State Auditor General's audits us every year. When you enter an audit, there's both an exit interview, but there's also an entrance interview. And at that point, it's a dialogue and say, well, this has come up, these are the items. You can, at that time, ask your auditors to focus on a particular area.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's just Auditor General's office, whether it's McCain and Sammons, whoever. Yes, we can ask the Auditor General's office to look at that area. You can just go out and hire any accounting firm in this county just to do an audit of that one particular piece. Have a narrow focus. That's what they call agreed upon procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Is what it's called. It's not an audit per se.
So usually after the CAF, when the CAF is that you get there.
Comprehensive and annual financial report.
Thank you. Yeah. And there usually is a page that they audited us, and this is what they and it's usually
right.
A blank, right, and this is where they fell short. And
they're called audit
again,
exceptions.
Again, this is a new superintendent, mm-hmm. but. Then you would think that, you would take a look at that and where we fell short and take action. I go back to my question. So it's not the people who are preparing the CAFA that we say now, see these areas fell short, because right away we're getting an audit. We're talking about creating a committee,
right.
Which I'm not opposed to. I just want to say that. But we have somebody come in, they perform this audit, they tell us where we're short, and then who's... working on that.
Dale, the superintendent, when we get that at the end, the superintendent writes a letter.
Right, they're required to explain
telling
that.
Us
right.
Exactly
yes.
What happened and how they're fixing it.
So my question to Matt is, when you say we can tell who, you said to focus on that, what area?
The Auditor General's office.
Yeah, they're actually here right now.
They're almost here 12 months
yeah,
a year.
Yeah, they're here almost all year long.
That seems like it may not be a good thing.
No, it's just governmental accounting. Governmental auditing at work.
We would take this committee, Matt, and give those areas that they come up with that needs focus to them?
No.
I'm misunderstanding
that. In the past, this district and most districts that have an audit committee, board members put somebody on the audit committee. That audit committee basically recommends different areas to be audited, to be studied. And so then So if it was going to be construction, you then contract with a separate firm to do that audit based on the recommendations of the audit committee and then approval by the board. So that audit committee could say, right now we want to focus on construction. When that one's done, when that audit comes back, those findings come back, next thing we're going to focus on is vacation, sick leave, buyout, that
okay.
kind of thing. So, and that way your audit committee can, well, we can hire firms that specialize in those different areas. It would be kind of hard, it might be kind of hard to find a gunslinger that has the knowledge of construction contracts, then can turn around and have all the knowledge of vacation, sick leave, buyout, and then can turn around and have all the knowledge of textbooks and stuff. I don't know.
We can probably get one that's also an attorney.
So could you bring that back to us on our...
Well,
so change that from internal.
I'm kind of getting the direction that we need to take the measures necessary to put the audit committee back in place.
Correct.
And what would that be? Each one of us nominate a person to the committee?
Yep.
Yeah, you get to appoint.
We do.
Yeah, you get to appoint one person, and
yeah.
And you know, and based on past experience too, I think it's important for the superintendent to recall, or not to recall, but to know that part of the history with our audit committee was that the leadership was sometimes dictatorial and disrespectful of the committee members. Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't, and I know that was way, you know, we don't have an audit committee anymore, so I think it's important in your role as superintendent to make sure that your staff representatives are copacetic in terms of recognizing that, you know, we have these members and the idea is to work as a team and not to have their own agenda, because we have to, you know, it works as long as the relationship is there. And I don't see any indicator, because that leadership is no longer here, you know, that that's going to happen. But I think it's important for you to be aware, because, you know, we want this to happen so that our district is on track, cost-effective, doing what it needs to be done, but we don't want it to flounder because there isn't good leadership.
Okay.
That's just history, not that it's current or any of those players are here anymore.
And terms run consecutive with the appointee?
Yeah, the elected.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
You have a board policy that defines your audit committee and also defines the types of individuals that to look for to be. So I can pull up that board policy and be sure that you each have a copy just to review at least what your board policy currently says. You, of course, can change it if you don't like the way it was set up, but we do have a policy that was used back in the day.
Question around that. I'm glad you mentioned it. Was that, did we just take the NEOLA policy like we did with so many other things and then in retrospect have to go back and fix it, or did we actually keep our own policy?
To my memory, I understand that was back in 2013. To my memory, it was a combination. There were some of the template policy language that was provided by NEOLA, and then there was some of the structure of how you like to select your members and that sort of thing. That was your individual language.
So that's not in NEOLA?
It's a combo. It's a combination of.
So yes, it's in NEOLA. If I look in NEOLA.
It's in, yes, sir. I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Yes, it's on the website in the policy tab.
Okay, so I have direction on that. The next item says report on ESE transition service to include what services the district currently provides. And then the direction, we do have a report we can bring to you and share about the transition services that we currently provide and what's being done. Especially at Wabasso, there's been a lot of an increase in what is being done at Wabasso with the new principal there. And I can put that on a discussion session in the near future. But keep in mind, though, that the DMC, that group that we hired, they'll be doing an analysis of that as well. So just wanted to update you on that. But I probably can't squeeze that onto the January 26th information discussion session because we've got a lot on there. But if I can, I will. If not, it'll be on the very next.
What's DMC?
That's the District Management Council. That's the company that we hired to do an in-depth audit of the ESE department. So you'll get a short presentation of what our transition services are now and what they're looking like. But keep in mind that's going to be part of the report we get from DMC. The next item was sick and vacation buyouts, and it's actually related to another item on the next page where we have sick and vacation policies. Mm-hmm. And so we have presented the information about how much we've paid out and sick leave and vacation. We presented that information to you all back in summer, I believe, and then gave you a handout, I think, a few weeks ago about that. The direction I believe that I'm given, so combining those two items, is you guys would like to have a workshop on the policies that we have, sick and vacation policies. Which ones are we bound to by statute? Which ones could we look at changing or amending? So, yeah, so I just want to make sure when I bring the people to the table to bring you information that it's the information you're looking for, not this is how much we've spent the last 5 years and, you know, this is how we budgeted for it and all that. Because we've budgeted for it. You know, we've paid out all of that. But it seems like the interest that I'm hearing is, are all of these policies, are we bound to all these policies by statute, or are there some that could be changed?
The one piece that I would, just as one board member, would like to see with that, I understand the part about the policies, but I would like just the basic information about where we're at in terms of how much we have to budget, how much we owe, how much is compromised, because I think that that's the issue that we're getting at, is the cost of maintaining this. And there has to be liquidity for that future expenditure, which impacts our funding for, you know, our present funding. So it's not necessarily a historical, but just a reminder, this is where we're at, these are the projections, because that is, that influence is influenced by policy.
Right.
But,
okay.
You know, not an in-depth.
Right. Well, I just want to make sure we don't need two different presentations. We need one presentation,
right,
but
yes,
we want some of the data about where we're at and then what policies are we're bound to and so on. Okay.
We can cover it at the same one.
Yep. Yep. All right. The next one, there was an item, said baseline data tied into desegregation. Superintendent said he may have some data by October, either October or 13th or 27th. I'm not sure if that title for that subject is correct, baseline data tied into desegregation. We did do some data analysis about suspension rates and how the, you know, the first quarter of the year is markedly different than our end of the year results last year. So we did do that. That data is not necessarily desegregation, so to speak, data. It's student performance data, and we were looking at it from a student performance perspective. If we want data tied primarily to the deseg order, then we need to look more at the equity report, mm-hmm. and which we give you every summer. So I can pull that data out and show that to you. But you know, where it says superintendent said he may have some data by October, and then anticipated timeline October 13th or 27th, we did look at suspension data, and I believe when I go back to the September 8th board meeting or September 8th discussion session, I was talking about suspension data, the CIES, you know, requirements and that kind of thing. So what I need to know before I say this one's done is, do you want different data than what we presented as far as suspension rate and so on?
Yes,
ma'am. I think that the DSEG data we're going to get regardless, because we're doing an investigation around compliance. I know that at previous meetings, one of the things that I have asked for as one board member that I think it's important for us to be aware of is how many of our students are in the lowest of the percentiles. Like, how many of our students in elementary school, middle school, and high school are like 10% percentile or below in English, in ELA, and in math? And I don't know if that data is already somewhere, because I think that one of our struggles is those kids are the lowest students. And I'm curious to know, if we're talking out of our 17,000 students, is it 100 kids? Is it 500 kids? Is it 1,000 kids? Because that has implications in terms of the services we provide for them. And if we have a lot of them at the elementary level, how are our early warning systems going to allow us to work with those kids to get them where they need to be, regardless of their skin color? You know, and with that data, it'd be interesting to see the demographics. Is it, you know, is But I think those numbers give us an idea of what those biggest challenges are for us, because I still don't have that understanding. But I don't, you know, it's just me, and I don't want to make
So am I hearing that you, it has nothing to do with DSEG, that you're looking for baseline data again for the lowest percentile, which could also be absenteeism, you know, what the subgroups are and what's driving that, if you can glean any information.
Yeah, I'll ask Mr. McMahon to give me a report on some stuff. I'll send it to you all first, and then we can put it on a list.
And where those students that Ms. Menes is talking about, where are they dispersed?
Right.
And are we making sure that we have some of the lowest 10% in every class? I'm speaking of the elementary level.
Sure, how they're assigned.
And in that same class, are we having the AP, you know, top drawer students? And what kind of crutch are we putting on that teacher, having to teach that young man or young woman who can't read and trying to challenge that person at the top? Yours is a good question, I think. But I think we need to know where that is, and it always comes back, and I'm going to speak about it tomorrow, you know, this leveling thing that we should be able to do. We should be able to segregate those kids some way and give them that extra help that they need to get to the top.
Right.
But if we just put them in a classroom with the bottom two and the top 99 and expect a teacher to teach them both of them, we're missing the boat. But it'd be interesting to me to see where they're dispersed in the school, and as a follow-up, possibly to find out how many of these kids came through those pre-K and
Head Start.
I don't think we have any research on Head Start and the success those kids have, but I'd like to see what that looks like. That's a great big project, I'm sure, but there has to be some tracking method.
It's all the literacy.
Well, and I think that you're probably going to see that it's absolutely true. Within a classroom, you're going to have somebody gifted and somebody here, and then that metal funnel. And then so how do you divide that? Maybe you'll have little, and then you need an extra teacher. And then yes, we should look at those, but then it may, and then we could see how where we fall short on we can't hire that extra teacher, because you have to take that out and make a special plan.
Well, If
no, and I'm just saying that's what needs
we
to
get
be
that lower 10% she's talking about.
Right.
We get them raised up. You know that what they talk about, all boats float on a rising tide or something. Well, we could raise the tide if we could get the special help that those children need. So I don't care what color they are, where they come. I don't really care if they're not getting it, and they're not getting it at home, and their parents are not helping them, and we're expected to do it. Get her done.
So has anyone else been exposed to the concept of competency-based education? I'm sure Dr. Rendell has competency-based learning. It's sort of the antithesis of what you just suggested, isn't it? Let's say I'm in a class with a student who's struggling, or I'm struggling in a class where a student's excelling. It's like differentiation, only instead of a class being built on our age, our the date of our birth, that's a little apropos. Our natal anniversary, how long we've been on this planet, it's based on whether or not we've mastered certain skills. So the idea of different grade levels working together, you know, it's a very elastic. You know, the idea that someone should be in third grade because they're whatever, 8 years old, doesn't necessarily make the most sense. You know, or that they should be in third grade if they're 10 years old or 12 years old. You know, maybe it's time to sort of rethink the whole model. But maybe I'll have someone come present that to us as an option, too. Because I know it's complicated.
But it works.
That's what the literature says. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why they started all these accelerators, like with the gifted students. They let them start taking the algebra in seventh grade, you know, or doing virtual school. And those things, you know, the brick-and-mortar, you're in third grade because you're 8 years old model may not be a 21st century model.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and as you say that, it makes me think of, you know, a couple of years ago we had these schools of innovation, and I think, you know, something like that Now, wouldn't that be an awesome school of innovation to pilot some, like do the research, you know, make sure it works, or, you know, make sure
it's
well-founded, whatever, and pilot it in one of these schools. I mean, we struggle with our schools being stigmatized. No matter how much work you do in some of our Title I schools, they are stigmatized. What if, you know, that was the thing with Somerset, man. What if we had a really good dual language community school? You know, what if we had a competency-based school and we just piloted it, see if it works, and then you replicate what works? You know, because every community is different, and a lot of times these are promising practices. They may have worked in Miami, but Indian River is a different beast, and that may not work here. But that would be an excellent way of really making that commitment to let's do something different. So,
but I would, and this is not to throw cold water on it, but I like the idea, but we did have a pilot concerning segregating the boys and the girls in school. The success was unbelievable, and we didn't do anything else with the program because the parents didn't want to participate.
It's still happening in Sebastian Elementary.
You have to get teachers.
No, I don't think we have any single-gender classes. There were two single-gender classes in Treasure Coast Elementary last year, but they're not in place.
And that's an easy, innovative program that we could start. And, you know, we don't tell parents where who their teacher's going to be, I don't think. Maybe sometimes we do, but if we say, this is your classroom, I mean, I know, I think Ms. Jimenez might have told me that it was kind of dictatorial. I don't remember that word being used, but, our job is to educate the kids and make sure we do the best we can for them. And if that works and success shows that it works.
So the direction is for baseline data with the subgroups so we could see where we're at.
Yep, and we could even analyze
and I'll work on the charter.
Place them where they are, different schools and everything. Yeah, we'll try to give you some a report.
I'll get that by tonight.
No, sir. Never overpromise and underdeliver. So.
Are we on page 2?
I hope so.
That's on the agenda tonight, correct?
Yes. So the first item on page 2, I probably could have checked off as completed because we do have an agenda item tonight with a revised attestation policy.
Great.
Putting the onus on the contractor if it's over $10,000. The next item, meeting places. We have done some investigation as to whether or not we could hold business meetings in other locations. That would be pretty tough. So with the board's blessing, I would like to pursue having meetings like this in other places as a start. And we could definitely do this. All we need is to bring the tape recorder. So we've already looked at a couple dates in February and March where we could have the discussion sessions at other locations, one in the north, maybe one in the south, that kind of thing, so we could start making ourselves more available to other parts of the county. But the business meeting with the live television and everything, that's going to be pretty tough to pull off.
I was on the board previously, and we tried having meetings in Sebastian and Fellsmere. The crowd was as light or lighter than it is in our regular meeting, so we didn't accomplish anything. That's history, and I know we talk about history sometimes, but it doesn't matter. People just don't care. They're not going to show up if we meet in Sebastian and City Council. Whatever it is up there. I mean, that was the experience that we had in a number of meetings that we tried this very thing. That was several years ago. You know, I wasn't as old as I am.
As we're putting things on the superintendent's plate, we put things on our own, such as the NAACP workshop. But maybe after we get some progress on that, would instead not a meeting but a maybe, you know, an evening town hall meeting where we're there.
That's different.
You know, I think that and why I say evening, because I want to see if our guests were still here, because people work. And I really think that, as I said, we're making progress, I think. You know, I like to think we're progressive forward and that we're trying to move forward and improve on everything we do. That maybe we look to do a North County, South County town hall meeting one evening. And I don't know where that form would be if we could, like, maybe do... I know Sebastian City Hall, at least people from Fellsmere, I'm sure the city manager would, you know, let us have one. And maybe even, you know, put it on their channel. But the other thing would... I don't know what's South County. I really don't want to say Vero because we're very close to Vero. So how do we get to the South County? That's a, you know, location...
I was going to say, we can do it at a school. We could do it at Oslo Middle.
Oslo. Mm-hmm.
If we didn't think we were going to have a large crowd, we could do it at one of the elementary schools.
If it's during tax season, you can do it in my conference room.
Yes. Yeah, and what I would add to that is that, you know, we have to, if we're doing a town hall, it would be an opportunity to hear from the community. And to, you know, because I know when I got on the board, that was like one of the things that I wanted, and I got it. But we had all the suits in there intimidating people, you know. So that was not really a town hall. It was everybody there with a PowerPoint telling the community a whole bunch of stuff, and it created. So I think, and then it became like, well, now we're imposing upon staff. Well, you wouldn't be imposing upon staff if you realized it was a town hall and it was your board members, sure, and maybe your superintendent or whoever.
And,
you know, so it doesn't have to, I think it's about hearing people,
right,
not trying to proselytize.
I think that maybe you're on the right track about the superintendent giving a mini State of the Union at the meeting, and then we open it up to the public with a, you know, 5-minute rule, you know, because we, you know what I'm saying, and they can bring their questions. Obviously, we have the expert with us, and if you don't mind, I don't want to...
Yeah, no, I'm totally okay with doing that, having the state of the school district address at the beginning and then open town hall discussion after that.
And let me just tell you why that's a lot of, you know, this sounds silly, but we are DirecTV family. We do not have any government channels. To get any government channels, we have to stream it, and most people just don't. So,
and it doesn't work a lot of times.
No, including us, by the way. The buffer, I don't know where, from this building, but that's a big complaint against the buffering on the very viewed ones, I guess, our hut meetings.
Why
can't we do it on YouTube?
I believe we probably could. I'll check with Mr. Green, but I'm pretty sure we could do that.
So, do we want to maybe do our first look at our first town hall meeting? Or, I mean, we have a lot going on. Maybe sometime after March. Is that fine?
On the timeline in the consent agenda for the superintendent's evaluation and all that, there's a date, I believe February 23rd, is when I plan on delivering the state of the district to you all. So we could easily then follow that up
with the March
town hall meeting.
Oh, that's
perfect.
So March.
Just another question on timing, since I wasn't around then. Ms. Mendez, was that around the same time we were trying to get a ballot? The 0.6 ballot initiative put through that we were out doing the PowerPoint?
No, but we did PowerPoints and town halls specifically around the ballot initiative.
That's
really which were made a difference.
Okay. I just wondering if it made any sense to either include or make sure that we do not include that. Because that's coming up, isn't it? Or that will be
special. I think we're a year away.
2017.
We're going to do a special election, or 2017, or it'll be part of the spring elections?
Well,
last time I talked to Mr. Morrison, I thought we were a year away.
But this is the question, too. We are currently in a mediation over that issue. Would it be better to get that issue behind us? Because then it's going to be, how can we get support from charter? I mean, and then ask for a new one and include that, you know, we may want to include them. I'm not sure where that comes for, you know what I'm saying? I don't, it's 2017 to answer your question.
Right.
And maybe we should see what the Department of we're up to the Department of Education. If, you know, just, I mean, I think we should revisit this when we have a little more, because it's very hard to say for the superintendent and then to ask the public to go out for a referendum when there's controversy within
right.
the public's.
So the item before us is irrelevant. So we can move on.
For now, but I want to go back to
yeah.
it.
Sure.
But if the interest is to go out for that 0.6 again, we need to know when it's coming up.
Yeah.
We don't have to have the ballot language today.
Sure.
And if we wait on Tallahassee to come down with the language for the charter school or whatever, that may be forever. I don't know if they have a timeline on it, but it could be forever. So we can't just wait for something to happen.
Right.
We need to move on. That's my thought.
So should we ask? I would like to ask the attorney. How would we best approach this? How do you think is the best way to approach this? Sir?
I have no idea how long it will take the Department of Education to respond.
There is no
statutory timeline for this mediation process. It's just however long it takes. So I can't advise you how long it will take them.
So then I hear you, but I also see this as a hurdle.
No,
how do we get over this hurdle when we're in a battle over the... Because do we include the charters? Would we want to include the charters?
Use the same language you used this time, because obviously they think that they're entitled to some of the money. We don't think they are, and when that case gets solved by Tallahassee, then we'll know what we have to do with the money. But the fact is, this 0.6 mil thing ends.
Yes.
And either we need to be ready to renew it or not. And it, I
have a budget ready.
In the election.
Yeah.
Included.
And that's a lot of positions, because we were talking about librarians, PE teachers, art teachers. So these are going
right.
to be positions. That
so what's the first step then? If you're saying, you know, I mean, and I hear you, continue, train keeps rolling. What do we need to do as a board to try to get a new referendum?
Yeah.
What
so,
do you want?
Put it on my list.
Put it on a
okay.
discussion.
Sure.
That's
on my
list.
Oh,
come back with you two with some timeline and some dates for the renewal of the 0.6.
I want that on my
hand. I'll take it to
So, but going back to the original agenda item for the meeting places, town hall meetings in March.
Yes, thank you.
Do you want to then not have me not pursue having these meetings out in the community, rather we focus on getting ready for these town hall meetings?
Sure, because these are one-sided.
Yeah, yeah. There's no interaction.
There's no person.
Correct.
It doesn't accomplish anything.
You're
understood.
You're stated intensively.
Okay.
And if they're going to, this is just, I want to throw this out, and it's up to everybody else. Obviously, it's if available, but would the opposite Tuesdays of the meetings we don't have, is that just a suggestion, or should we try to get five people's schedules and the town hall? I mean, should we shoot for that, or just see what Dr. Rendell can find available, or Ms. Stang find available for a meeting place? You know what I'm saying? March 12th is the meeting, so then...
So the next Tuesday,
the
19th and
the 26th, but I'm not sure that's Easter.
One
of
those is spring break.
Spring break.
It
one
is.
Of them.
Yeah.
Right.
So then flip that over to the April.
How about I come up with some dates in March?
Sure,
I'll do a little research, bring it back to them.
Okay.
Yeah, April would probably be better.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
No.
Not 15.
Late April.
See, now I only think of the corporate one.
I mean, March.
So I think about March.
No, I do too.
Yeah. Yeah.
March
February 15th, April 15th, y'all have fun.
We could have fun.
March 31st, April 15th, what about all those people that are holding up because of the medical?
Extensions.
Yeah. The medical paperwork
right.
you have to submit.
Y'all have
September and October.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I have direction on that.
Yeah.
So we anticipate to have that check in hand today.
Mm-hmm.
And
what?
the next item, the check from Pearl, yes. And if I have it at the board meeting, I will bring it and show it to all of you at the board meeting.
Are you going to bring the big check out?
No, sir. No, I don't want to make a public display of it, but I want to make sure that we have it in hand. I show it. Dr. Martinez and I have already talked about starting the process for refreshing our list of pro bono attorneys for student expulsion hearings. So that's in process. I don't want to say complete because we haven't done it.
Okay.
But I wanted you to know it was in process. Mr. Morrison is pouring through all kinds of purchase orders and other documents that he found from June Sullivan, the retired media specialist at Grovey High School, regarding the novel overpurchase and then return to the book depository and that kind of thing. Right now, it appears, as we thought, we got full credit for everything, but we want dollar figures. So we're not going to bring anything to you until we have dollar figures. What we have are some invoices that show zero balance, which means we weren't charged. But I'm still not confident. I want to make sure, you know, if we spent $65,000, did we get $65,000 credit? So we're still pursuing documents to make sure. So that's in process, not complete. I have guidance on the next item, sick and vacation policies. We're going to combine, you know, everything into one presentation. We talked about the next thing, guidance counselors. We did that today. You guys have seen the drafts of the local school grade proposal. We're pretty much finished with it, so we should be able to present it to you in 2 weeks on the 26th at the discussion session. And the superintendent's timeline is on the agenda for today. So.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, for our local report card, are we going to have we talked about having a moonshot piece. We talked about having a teacher satisfaction piece. Are we going to have a student satisfaction piece?
Not on the one we're going to present on the 26th.
I think that would be really important. That goes to the attendance issues, that goes to schooling issues. You know, that's just as important because I know we're going to hear from parents too. Right? There's a piece that includes parents.
Right. That we already have on the report card, mm-hmm. the parent column.
Right.
What we want to do is have a front sheet that has all the categories and all the grades, and then a sheet for each of the categories. Mm-hmm. So we have kind of like a folder, and we really want to make it a threefold pamphlet. But anyway. So on the page that talks about attendance or on the page that talks about climate, mm-hmm. you'll have the parent climate response, but then we'll also have some student climate response and some staff climate response. In the future, if we think those are valuable enough to put on the main mm-hmm. report card, we can do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's our report card. We can do what we want with it. But Mr. Green and I were doing it yesterday and this morning, and we feel pretty confident that it's ready to go. So.
I may be wrong, but wasn't student attendance on there as a metric?
Yes, student attendance is on there.
You know, it's the best possible quantitative we have.
Correct.
Different question? Okay, that was sassy. The school grades, we kind of tossed around, do you think we'll have a district projection?
So there was a commissioner's conference call this morning from the State Commissioner of Education, and she was asked that question. When the simulated grades become official February 9th, they will also issue district grades at that time. Mr. Green and I have had lengthy discussions about whether we can calculate a district grade, and we really don't have the capacity to calculate the district grade because the way they do it, we don't have access to the data files the way that they do. So he's going to have to explain it to you, but I kept pushing him, and he says,
nope.
We're not sure it would be a reliable number or letter. So rather than give us a letter and then have it be something different.
But it seems strange that you wouldn't at least at some point get the formula that you could do your own analyses, because that's basically saying, well, you know, everything's made up and the points don't matter. You know, this is your grade. Tell me how you arrive at this grade. No, this is how you get your grade. You know, it's the difference between like the teachers. Teachers don't give grades, students aren't.
Yeah.
So we should be able to calculate our GPA and our as a district.
But going back to my history in St. Lucie and Brevard, I don't believe we ever tried to calculate our district grade. So I have a call into a couple of people that used to work in the bars that worked in testing and accountability that retired. I asked them, hey, did you guys ever predict your grade? And I haven't heard back from them yet. So.
Thanks for all the...
Well, I mean, I'd like, if we could know, I'd like to know whether we're going to be celebrating or not beforehand, but we don't seem to be able to get that data.
I have a question on that. If you know what your grade was last year, and you know what all the school grades were and the points and all, couldn't you go back and have Mr. Green do all of his numbers in his computer and say, well, this is what we, this is the grade we had last year, this is the points we had, and we came up with an A. And go back to the year before that and look at the same
That's
thing.
That's what I said.
And
he's the data expert, and he told me we can't do it with any sense of confidence that we could predict it accurately. Now, if I hear from the people that used to work in Brevard that I thought very highly of, they say, oh, yeah, this is how you do it, then we'll do it.
Maybe just have some formula if it can be done.
But it's not as simple as saying taking all your A schools right. and B schools and adding
you
them
get
up to get
points.
A GPA. That doesn't work
points.
Like that.
But you have numbers associated with the A and numbers associated with the B and all that. So
it's all student performance. Mm-hmm. And so you've got X hundred fourth graders, X hundred third graders, X thousand. Each one take different tests. So fifth grader, for example, takes three tests, mm-hmm. English, language, arts, math, and science. Fourth graders, three tests, writing, English, side.
Impossible.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's impossible. But Bruce said he couldn't do it with any confidence.
Mm-hmm. Since you're done with your calendar, I have a question about the item that we're going to have tonight on the board around the changes for employees' salaries. And when that was pulled last time, I know that most of us got emails from people that were concerned with equity and, that had concerns around different issues related to the changes being made. Will there be an explanation tonight for those items to give people feedback in terms of some of these questions?
Yeah, when we get to the action agenda item, Dr. Fritz actually is going to do a little bit of an explanation of how we came to where we are mm-hmm. and what the employees can do if when they see their salary. No one's salary is going down. Mm-hmm. When they see their salary, if they don't think it's accurate, they can contact HR and they can do some investigation and that kind of thing. We did send everybody a letter stating the same thing. So we're trying to make sure that people understand there was a process involved in shifting to this new type of salary schedule, and if they have questions about it, we're prepared to sit down with them and try to answer those.
I know, I've been contacted by some of the social workers who are concerned about that. And they might, and I said, if you have a concern, you can contact the district or you can come and talk to the board before the meeting or when the item is being discussed so that at least they're heard.
And to be honest with you, just my personal experience, I received a few emails the last time before it was pulled, mm-hmm. and none this time. So the letter might have clarified for the most part.
Yeah. And we did some education after we pulled it because people asked questions. So when we ask questions, we get them answers. But just yesterday, Dr. Fritz met with the psychologist and talked about how that salary was migrated and, if we need to make adjustments to that, how we can and that kind of thing.
Can we, with this new technology we have, can we put Dr. Fritz's phone number?
His personal cell on the website.
Oh. On the bottom line, or whatever you call that.
So that's it.
Personal address.
I have a question. Sure. And I was just, the other night, I didn't have anything to do about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was reading through our bylaws, and I noticed we have to change the address and all. Have we done that? For this location, that's what the bylaws call for.
We've changed
an amendment to the bylaws.
We've changed the address on all of our stationery and all of those other things. I don't know that we've changed
it. It's in the bylaws.
That we have to have an amendment.
That's illegal.
The proposed rule revisions that your staff are currently working on also include those policies with address changes. So some of that will be coming forward to the board shortly. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are some other policies that also have the address that haven't been touched recently. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be a separate list that will
be coming forward to be revised.
Which brings me to, I have changed my email response, but Ms. Stang, we have to work on getting new business cards with the right addresses, and for those who want it. And then also...
No, I told you, I've never given one out.
And then also...
Six and a half years.
Make sure, I don't want to just... Let us check with you, because I got a cell phone after my last business card, and I don't have my cell phone number, so then they call you, and then you give it out, and I'd like to be able to, you know, or I handwrite it. So if we're going to go to print, I want to get mine right. So if everybody has changes to your information, then we'll give it to Judy. And I did want to talk to housekeeping items. I want to confirm, you know, we do the best, as I've said, we can't dance every dance. I think we do a good job at trying to. Thank you, Ms. Jimenez, for taking the leadership breakfast at John's Island on the 25th. I do know, Dr. Rendell, you are attending the 25th. We don't have a board member available. Just wanted to mention
that. Yeah, but I'm there.
But you are there?
Yeah.
And, which it says it. Come join you. So I just wanted to put that out. And then I... Judy, you left this in my box. Is that because we're not registered? Because I've noticed when Matt and I, Ms. Jimenez, have walked, you walked last year, I think we joined up with the school. Well, we walked in front of some. Okay. The year before, we walked in front of Vero Beach Elementary. And plus, I noticed the date's late. We have not submitted it.
What is it?
No.
It is to walk in the Martin Luther King Parade.
Monday, right?
Who is walking?
Yeah, I'm going to be out of town.
I had said I was going to, but my father's in the hospital
Saturday.
Yeah,
we're going to be going to.
And he's doing tests on Monday. Mm-hmm. I just looked at the time. I remembered it to be 8, but I looked down here and it's at 10. But I is anybody walking? That's the first question.
No.
I'll walk with the school if I have to.
Are you walking? Because I will.
Funny
enough, my father said he could drive himself.
I'll go to Tallahassee
Monday. Tries to be crazy, but...
Well, I will be...
You're walking?
I will be participating in the parade.
Well, yeah, because usually we have... I mean, in the past, I'm sorry, but in the past we've had, you know, Dr. Adams, Butch Teske, me, Jeff Pegler. I mean, a whole. It's not just board members. It's a whole... several people from here.
You haven't applied for a... miscellaneous group?
No, I have not taken any action because I never received a reply in the positive. All the responses were no. So no, I did not. That's why I gave that to you.
Can
make sure.
Is it too late?
No, we didn't make a call.
So I don't think so. So can you, we have a few people that are going to walk. We can always, I forgot where they put us. They put us, always put us behind the sheriff's department.
That was at our at the board's request.
Don't you think we should? I don't care. Can you make sure that you have administrative leader, elected official administrative leader thing?
So are you walking
I will
in
walk
any particular
with,
group?
I was going to walk with the county commissioners.
Okay.
I'll walk together.
I'll walk
with those knuckleheads.
Okay. Huh? We're going to walk with the county commissioners.
Exactly.
Okay? So we're all good.
Somebody
those are the two items I have for house cleaning. Anything else?
When we update our business cards, we need to put the district that we represent, number one. And on the website where we have all of our pictures and all, there are no contact information. And I've been asked about that several different times.
My cell phone is the first thing you see.
I think your number's on there.
Yeah. Isn't
all you got to do is see Robbie.
Well,
yeah.
The point is,
Robbie.
It's not there.
Yeah, we
and people try to contact us, and they should be able to, but they don't see any numbers there. So,
yeah. So we'll just, for those that have...
Just tell Robbie.
Yeah.
Tell Robbie where you want.
Is there any other meeting? A business?
There are meetings.
There's two, at least.
Just the 4 o'clock.
Okay, right.
And then the business meeting.
Well, then, meeting again.
Seriously,
there's my 10-year-old.
Oh yeah, don't miss the elevator
in the back field.
Oh, that's great! Look at that.
Does anybody know what time it is?
Good for
right
her.
Down the time. It's 3.
I'll give it to everyone. The hard copy. That's it.
Okay. I'm gonna have to bring in my cell phone.
Everyone has the digital version. You'll have the hard copy.
Yeah.